What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Thank you all for tuning in. My guest today is a 14-year NBA veteran, widely respected NBA veteran, who's really thoughtful on just about everything, and he's seen just about everything. He is Thaddeus Young, currently a member of the Chicago Bulls, and Thad has stories to tell. He played with Allen Iverson during Iverson's final stint with the Sixers. He lived through year one of the process, and he's got thoughts on the process. He was on the court the night Derrick Rose went down with his ACL, and plenty of other stuff, including, of course, this crazy, weird, choppy season that we're still going through, all the injuries, a lot of that in the news this week. And so Thad and I talked about the challenges of this year and everything the players have been through. Was it worth it? Was it worth packing these 72 games in, given what we've seen? He also talked about what it's like to guard Kevin Durant, because he has spent plenty of time doing that, and we've seen what Kevin Durant can do in recent days. So Thad's got a few thoughts on what the Bucks maybe should be doing to try to deter Mr. Durant. Thad's also an entrepreneur, has his own venture capital group, so we got into that a little bit as well. All really enjoyable conversation. Before we get to all of that, a quick reminder, please subscribe, rate, and review The Crossover on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can hit me on Twitter with any feedback at Howard Beck. Okay, coming up next, my conversation with Thaddeus Young. So stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, pleased to be joined by a 14-year veteran of the NBA, currently of the Chicago Bulls, Thaddeus Young. Thad, how are you, my friend?
Doing fine. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for spending some time. Before we started recording, you were just giving me all the rundown, the highs and lows of backyard excavation of your off-season home. So I hope all that goes well with your AstroTurf, your gym, pool, everything. This is the NBA life in an off-season, right?
No, I wouldn't say that. It's just the life that I have as of right now. But, you know, off season is more, you know, guys getting out with their families and going on vacation. I feel like I've done enough vacationing during the season with all the travel. So I like to kind of sit at home and be able to enjoy the comforts of my house. So I wanted to make it like a vacation home, to where I have a pool, I have, you know, stuff that I can go out there and train with and enjoy, you know, the perfect views from the balconies and stuff like that. So for me, I like to be a homebody during the summer.
Yeah. Nice. I hope all of the backyard excavation has not affected your cable service or your satellite or anything else, because the NBA right now is bonkers. Are you a guy, because not everybody does. Some guys unplug and say, I'm not in the playoffs, I'm not watching. Some guys are just hoop heads and can't get away from it. Which do you go? Are you watching every minute of the playoffs?
I try to get away from it, but it's hard because, you know, you see everything on Instagram, you see everything on Twitter. Social media is always booming when, you know, guys are hitting big shots and stuff like that. So, you know, you want to see those next games. So I'm one of those guys that try to get away from it, but some kind of way always gets reeled back into the games and sitting there going crazy on the couch with my wife and my kids.
And things are bonkers. So this is going to publish Friday, but you and I are talking on Wednesday, which felt like, I was like Black Monday in the NFL or something. I don't even know what to compare this to. But in the hours leading up to you and I getting on this Zoom call, Stan Van Gundy's out in New Orleans and Scott Brooks is out in Washington. And Kawhi Leonard has something going on with his ACL and is not going to play for at least the next game. And oh yeah, Chris Paul is in COVID protocols, apparently, that we do not have official confirmation. Are you as dazed as the rest of us watching this unfold?
Yes. I'm like in awe with all the coaching changes and seeing what they're saying about like coaches that's on the hot seat as well as the coaches that were just, you know, let go or mutually parted ways. You know, and then, you know, when you see that, you know, we've seen Mike Conley hasn't been playing. And then we just seen Chris Paul is moved into health and safety protocols. I want to see how that shakes out, because, it's going to be hard for that team to win the next game if Chris Paul doesn't to win the first game if Chris Paul doesn't play. And I'm not saying that they're not capable, but Chris Paul brings another dynamic to that team. And then it's going to be hard for Kawhi, for the Clippers to overcome, the Jazz, if Kawhi doesn't play. You know, yes, they have another star and a lot of guys that on that team that can play basketball, but they've been hampered by injuries as well. Serge Ibaka going down is big for them as well. So, just seeing all the injuries unfold and seeing how these playoff series are unfolding, it's a game for anybody to win now.
It's been like this, right, all season, Thad. Like, this has been this, it's a compressed season. It's a COVID season. It's no fans. It's injuries. And we don't know, right? Like, we don't know. Was the quick turnaround or the schedule responsible for all these injuries? Like, we'll never know. There's no scientific way to prove any of that. But it feels that way. How are players feeling about this as we sit here in mid-June? My buddy Mark Stein just tweeted a little bit ago, I guess the Elias Sports Bureau says this is the most All-Stars to miss at least one game in the playoffs in NBA history. How do you guys as players process all this? And obviously you guys had a say in this too. It wasn't just Adam Silver deciding we're going to have the season 72 games over X number of days. The union has a role in this too, so everybody agrees to it. But we've seen the consequences. How have you guys felt about it at a player level?
I mean, at a player level, we're being paid to play it, to go out there and play a game and to actually do our jobs. So I think, but I also think that guys, wanted to get back out and play. So I think that's the reason why we kind of agreed to what we agreed to. And we worked something out to where we can go out there and play the 70 plus games. So for us, we're having fun doing what we do, and injuries are a part of the game. I think for the most part, guys are healthy, but you wear down over the course of a season, especially how brutal our season is. Like, when you think about it, like, we're losing a lot of rest time in between all the different things that we have to do now with COVID protocols and everything else that goes on. So, you lose rest time when you have to, go and leave out of your house and go back and test during the times that you usually take naps. Coming back to the gym late at night to test when you have early games the next day, showing up to the gym, earlier than you usually show up. All these are things that takes away from your rest time, and, not being able to be in the gym extra time because, COVID protocols, everybody has to leave by a certain time sometimes. Just a lot of different things that kind of stops you from getting the work in or doing the work or having the necessary recovery times that you need. Everything is just very unprecedented right now. And it's putting us in a whole different ball game of, the way we have to train our bodies and our minds to be mentally focused and prepared for what's ahead.
So you think it's taking a toll?
For sure. It's showing right now how it's taking a toll on everybody. Like, when Mark Stein tweeted and said, like, this is the most All-Stars that miss a game in playoff history, like, it's showing that guys are breaking down and their bodies are wearing down, and these are crucial moments and crucial times.
It's easy to say it now looking back, but I mean, I'm just curious, like, do you think, and maybe do your peers think, maybe it was a mistake to do it this way? Maybe if we go back to December, because not everybody was on board with jumping right in, starting on December 22nd. LeBron had talked about that at times. Has anybody kind of second-guessed this a little? Like, maybe this was, obviously the league and the players both. The money is the money. The revenue's there, the TV revenue. Maybe we should have done this differently.
I think everybody second-guessed, when you start to see injuries and guys go down and stuff like that. I think everybody's, like, going to have some type of doubt in their minds and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like, we at some point we have to start up and we have to get things going back and try to get back to regular times and regular normal living. And I think, sports is one of the ways that everybody can get back to that. So now, we're seeing all of the fans coming to the games because they were so antsy and stuff like that, and now you're getting those crowds and you're getting the hype out of the game that we endured so much, that we wanted so much during the season. So, you know, I think everybody had, you know, had some doubts, but we all knew that we had to get things going back in the right way in order to try to get back to some regular living.
Yeah. It makes a big difference, by the way, just like even watching from home, like seeing, you know, games with fans sitting there, just even as they're just panning by, hearing it, feeling it, like even again at home, because I've been to one game in 14 months, which is strange from my standpoint too. I'll get back there eventually, but it changes the entire feel of a game, and I have to imagine you guys feel that too. We talk about home court advantage and a hostile crowd and all this, and it sometimes feels very abstract, but it, like, you do feel it, right? Like it, you know, I'm sure over the course of this season, as they started to let guys back in, did you feel the change? Does it change the way your body reacts? Does it change the way you guys perform out there as fans are now in the buildings after months of emptiness?
Well, so with us, with the Bulls, we didn't really get fans until we were one of the last teams to get fans. So we didn't really get fans until probably like the last three or four games of the season. And those three or four games with fans were much better for me and other guys probably than the whole season, because we actually had people in cheering us on. We actually had people that we can communicate with outside of your normal security guards in the arena and team officials and people working in the arena, the testers and stuff like that. So you get to see different faces as opposed to seeing familiar faces that you see every single time that you come into the arena. So I think that was one of the better aspects for us. But, you know, you go to other cities, and we went to Phoenix, and Phoenix had a whole bunch of fans, and we were like, oh, this is crazy. And the atmosphere was like a regular game. I think the same with like San Antonio and stuff like that. So it definitely plays a big role in energy levels and how we kind of look at things from a different perspective with listening to the fans cheering us on. You get to get the crowd hype when you make big shots, and you know, as opposed to you make a big shot and they pump in the fake crowd noise, and you look up and there's nobody there. Nobody else jumping up and down. So it's just like, yeah, like you definitely want those fans, because they're a big part of the game. They're a big part of like all the different organizations. They're part of the reason why the league is what the league is now.
Yeah, I'm not down with the cardboard cutouts at Staples Center and stuff. Like, that's a little creepy, Frank. Portland did that too, I think. Like, I would rather just see the empty seats. Like, if you're going to have fake noise, fine, whatever. But yeah, you're panning over like cardboard cutouts is just a little unnerving to me.
Yeah, know? I mean, it's crazy. Like, so like before the season, we had a meeting, and then they gave like these marketing plans on to all the teams on like how they can actually switch the arena around with all the different sponsors and stuff. So one marketing plan had the screens with the Microsoft Teams.
Yeah, like they did in the bubble. Yeah.
Yeah, so they had the teams, the Microsoft teams, and then at one had you can put banners over like the first 15 or 20 seats that has whoever your main sponsor is. And then another was like those cardboard fans. So I was just looking at this like, this is crazy. This is wild. Like we're really going through marketing plans for three different aspects that still doesn't put fans in the seats. So it was just crazy. Like I was just like, man, we got to hear if we get fans back at some point.
We will never forget this season, Thad. Like we will never forget, like whether you're a player or as media fans, whoever, like this will be, and I don't know how we'll remember it. And I don't, it may take some distance and some time before we really kind of look back and figure it out. But we're still in the midst of it. We're, you know, here on the, you know, the conference finals will be starting soon. This is not an asterisk question, right? There are no asterisks. Every season's got something. There's no asterisks. Everything's valid. However, it's been a very strange season from no fans to the compressed schedule to teams getting quarantined. The Washington Wizards having 2 weeks of their season just wiped out in January. The Raptors playing in Tampa. All this stuff. When you look at what the league has gone through and is still going through to get to the finish line here, it's not an asterisk question. It's all valid. Champion will be the champion. However, what do you make of it? Do you feel like to some extent, because there's a lot of anomalies in all of this, no home court advantage, does it all matter, or do you look at it and go like, you know what, like this does not indicate anything about like our team? Like, you guys had obviously a rough season. We'll talk about this in a minute, but like, you guys had a tough season, tough end in particular. How much of it do you play stock in after all the weirdness of this season?
One thing for sure is that you have like the season still has to be played, and you still have your players. Everybody else has their players. So you're still going out there, and you're still actually playing the game. So you put a lot of stock into what you're going out there and doing. And, you know, we try to pull the, you know, all the bads and then, you know, turn those bads into goods by working on those things and practice and stuff like that. But as far as pulling something from the season, you can pull a lot from this season because, one, we were faced with a lot of adversity and a lot of challenges, you know, to get through this season and to try to win basketball games through an unprecedented time where we didn't have fans, we didn't have appropriate times and stuff to practice sometimes. We didn't have, our families weren't able to just really, like, travel with us. We had to show up to the gym that specific times, especially if somebody caught COVID, then now your gym is shut down because somebody caught COVID, and then, or you have to cancel practice, or, you know, everybody has to, you know, sit 5 to 6, 7 feet away from each other. Like, all these things are kind of like very, very like unprecedented. So you try to pull what you can because you still have to go out there and play. And then I think one of the biggest things it shows is that who you can go to battle with and who you can fight with and who's gonna fight through the adverse times. And I think that was one of the biggest things that we can pull from that, because through all of this, we as a team still stuck together. We still came to work each and every day when we could come to work and do what we need to do. And, you know, you pull a lot from that. You pull a lot of value from that.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. It makes sense. I wonder too, like, you know, if we think about like young players and role players often will struggle on the road, but if there's no fans and no hostile crowd, like, are some guys maybe like overachieving a little bit? And then are other guys, you know, maybe you don't have as much to get you juiced up on game day, home or road. So it's like, I do wonder, it's like statistically, like a little bit of how the weirdness of the season might affect our perceptions of how certain players and teams did.
It could be, but I think for one thing is you won't be able to see the real results until the following year, right? Because this was an unprecedented year, and then you had the stuff that went on with your team, and then if you bring that same team back during a time where it's regular, then you can take those two seasons and then put the stats against each other and see how it was with fans, without fans. Like, these are all stats that, like, we probably shouldn't be looking into, but but, you know, they are stats, and we know that the league now is an analytical and data and stat driven league. So, you know, these are things that you can look at, like, okay, how's he when we got 15,000 fans in the building, and how's he when we don't have 15,000 fans in the building?
Yeah.
Good. No, I said, it's definitely things that you can pay attention to.
While we've been talking, just in the last few minutes, we now have the Wizards have formally announced they're moving on from Scott Brooks, and Shams Charania of The Athletic is reporting that the Mavericks and Donnie Nelson are parting ways.
Oh, wow.
So by the end of this podcast, by the time you and I are done talking, they're going to have like folded three teams. Adam Silver is going to have moved to some desert island. And I don't know what else. Things are crazy.
Yeah, this is the craziest, like the craziest off season I've probably seen so far as like movement. And with all this movement, I honestly think that there's going to be a lot of movement of players this summer as well. So like, it's definitely going to be a lot of different things that's going to be happening. And then another thing I see is that I see teams, they feel that there's not really a powerhouse. They feel that they have a chance to win now. Like, yeah, you have a big three and with the Brooklyn Nets, and, you know, you have the same thing with the Clippers, and you have the same thing with the Lakers, but teams are still feeling that, you know, with a strike of luck that they still can beat them. So, you know, you got some teams that might feel that they're one piece away. You know, so teams are feeling much more comfortable than they did when Golden State was making that run, you know, with KD and Draymond and Steph and Klay. Teams are feeling much more comfortable now, you know, for to have some type of emergence in these playoffs, because they feel like they can play harder, and if they play smarter, and then that they can wear some of these teams down, or injuries might happen, and they're able to win some series. So, you know, definitely see a lot more changes coming. Like, we might as well just buckle up and just go along for the ride.
I think that's good advice. And I think you're right. Like, before the postseason started and somebody had asked about, all right, like, so who are the contenders? Who are the favorites? And I said, I'm not sure there was one or even two favorites. I thought there were legitimately eight, maybe even nine teams. Because I still included, before the postseason started, I thought Denver, maybe they can overcome not having Jamal Murray. Still kept them in there. I had five teams in the West and four in the East that I thought were legit. That included Miami. The Heat flamed out. I misfired on that one. But I thought they should be in that conversation. So when's the last time we were even talking about eight or nine teams as potential finals teams going into a postseason, as opposed to it usually being like, yeah, there's three?
Well, maybe... before the Golden State era?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I'd have to go back and look. But you had the Heat for 4 years before, you know, because, you know, the Cavs go four straight years. The Heat went four straight years with LeBron.
But that was before the Warriors got there. That's what I'm saying.
That was the thing. The West was more fluid at that time. The East was locked up. The West was fluid. Yeah, that's true.
So you had a lot of teams that had potential, because even during those times that Bron and D Wade was together, they won two out of four.
But they went to the finals all 4 years.
Yeah, they went to the finals all 4 years, but they won two out of the four. So therefore, you know, who beat them? Dallas and San Antonio.
Yes.
So you had potential contenders, and then the Thunder was a contender, and. Who else? You had
that was it. They had San Antonio twice. So they lost to Dallas, they beat Oklahoma, they beat San Antonio, then they lose to San Antonio, then LeBron goes back to Cleveland.
Yep.
And then the Warriors become the Warriors, and then KD does KD things. KD's doing KD things. So look, you're a forward who has probably spent a fair amount of time dealing with Kevin Durant doing Kevin Durant things. Defense is part of your resume. What did you make of that game five? And as you're watching from home, are you feeling the same helplessness that the Bucks are feeling? Or are you thinking like, oh no, man, you got to play up on them more, or no, you got to like, are you playing it out in your own head? Or are you just glad you're not the victim?
Well, I think everybody's glad they're not the victim. KD is always been a phenomenal scorer. Me and him we're the same high school class, so we have a good relationship as well from playing against each other. Mickey D's game, Jordan game, stuff like that. But man, like he just locked in. Like, I think he heard the noise from the game prior to that when Kyrie goes down and you have to kind of take things in your own hands, and you know, he was playing sloppy basketball in that game prior. He was a little rattled, and then you come out this game and you show, you know, who you are as an athlete. You know, you bounce back, and I think he did a really good job of just going out and bouncing back. You know, because there was a lot of talk about, oh, PJ Tucker locked him up. He was 2 for 9 when PJ Tucker was guarding him and stuff like that. You know, ESPN put all those stats and stuff like that, and you know, he's a guy that sees that, and when he sees that, he's like, okay, like, I got to go show him who I am. And I think he did a really good job of that, playing every single minute of the game, controlling every single aspect of the game. And, you know, they were down early, but, you know, second half, he willed that team to victory, and he continued to go out there and do what he does, do what he do. And then he gets a triple-double as well doing it. So, you know, he showed why he's considered one of the best, if not the best player in the world.
In the wake of something like that, there's all this, well, you know, Giannis should have been on him more. They should have done this. They should have done that. And then the press conference clip from the Clippers from Pat Beverly Louise made the rounds last night, which is really funny. I'd forgotten about that one, about like, come on, what do you expect us to do? He's Kevin freaking Durant. Like, is it as simple as that? Like, is there anything that can't even be done schematically or personnel wise, or are there nights, especially when it's a player of Kevin Durant's caliber, do you say, look, I could give my best and he's still going to go out and have a 49-point triple double?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more so of like the bodies that you're sending at him, the way that you're guarding him and the shots that you're forcing him into. Like, he was just comfortable the whole night. Right. So walking into all the shots that he wanted to walk into, as opposed to you forcing him into tougher situations. And Giannis could have guarded him and probably forced him into some tough situations. And it still would have been tough on Giannis. Like, they're like, don't get me wrong, it's going to be tough on whoever's guarding. I don't give a shit if you're the best defensive player in the world. but it's still going to be tough on whoever's guarding him. I think it's just more about forcing him into certain situations and not letting him get to his spots. Because that's the one thing KD does. He gets to his spot and he just pulls up and like you're not even there. You know, forcing him to crowd situations and pushing him into all these different situations to the point where, you know, he has to make tough shots. And, you know, don't get me wrong, he's going to make some. But usually the numbers go down when you're forced into a difficult shot every single possession.
Yeah. I think by the time this runs, they will have played game six. But would you expect to see more Giannis on KD in game six after that?
I expect to see more double teams and triple teams after this game. so it's going to be a little bit of everybody guarding him. They're going to have to guard him as a team, and I think they're going to have to figure out how to make other guys make shots, which they can. I'm not saying they can't, because, you know, let's not take him out of the conversation. Jeff Green had a phenomenal game as well.
Yes. Yes.
You know, he stepped up big time for us 14-year vets out there. So he did a phenomenal job as well of going out there and executing and doing what he needed to do. You know, and piggybacking off what KD did. You know, KD put up 49 and he puts up, I think, 27. So that's huge, you know, especially with James coming back off injury and you know, you got and then you got other guys that they come off the bench and step up. And he was one of those guys who did his thing. So, you know, let's not take Jeff Green out of the conversation, because, you know, he was one of the main reasons.
Got to respect those former Supersonics. It's all
for sure.
The ghost of the Sonics last night. You got a new nickname this season, Thagic Johnson. I don't know how you feel about that nickname that Stacey King came up for you.
Stacey's crazy.
You know, it's cool. Like, I like the wordplay, but Thagic sounds a little too much like tragic. I'm not sure how I would feel about that, you know.
I thought it was funny.
it's good stuff. So the reason for that, of course, you had by far your best assist year of your 14-year career, 4.3 a game. But if you go to the advanced stats, 27% assist rate, which means that you assist when you were on the court, 27% of all baskets by your team were assisted by Thad Young. By far your career best. You were 24th in the league among guys, I looked this up, with at least 20 minutes per game. So you're now, you know, ranking in the top whatever percent of the league in assist rate. How do you, in year 14, become a passing maestro?
I mean, I think it's just more of the situations that I was being put in. We have point guards, obviously, but the way our offense is orchestrated through the bigs. So if your big is at the top of the key and guys are moving and cutting, you know, typically 9 times out of 10, a lot of guys ball watch, and, you know, when they ball watch, you know, it leads to backdoor cuts, and it leads to, you know, guys being able to turn corners and guys being able to slide behind other guys and do different things. So for me, I think it was just more so like I was just using more of the smarts and intelligence part of my game, as opposed to, you know, just going out there and just playing basketball. Like I would tell my team, like, hey, you know, we're not gonna just beat guys off the dribble, you know. So, but we can beat guys cutting and moving, because guys get sloppy on the defensive side of basketball. Nobody wants to guard for 24 seconds. like nobody in the league. Everybody wants to guard 7-8 seconds, and then you put up a shot, and then they go down, push it down your throat, and then you do. We come back and do the same thing over and over. Like, that's why you have so many threes and so many teams scoring so many points. But if you can find a team that knows how to move, cut throughout the whole shot clock, you're going to get a layup. So that's why I would preach to my teammates all the time. Like, look, if I get the ball, just move and cut. I'll be the transporter and distributor. Just move and cut, and I guarantee you I'll find you. And it always works that way. You know, and it was very good for me this season because they put me in a whole different position to where I can really excel and show my natural skill that I've always kind of had. But I was never able to kind of show it because I was always playing in a different role where I was playing on the baseline as opposed to playing at the top of the key, or like I'll play in the mid post or the mid range area as opposed to playing at the top of the key and kind of looking down and seeing the basket and being able to orchestrate all the offense.
So this was something to do with just a coaching change and a different philosophy with the offense this year too. Like did Billy come to you early in the season, say like, or in training camp, say like, we think we can use you this way and make you that much more effective?
Honestly, I think it happened. I think coaches kind of seen it from like when we had our own little bubble before the season started. So we had a chance to like just play basketball. So I think he just kind of seen how I was kind of gelling with the guys and telling the guys, yo, like cut here or do this, do that. And like, we're going to get the back door cut. Like, oh, we're going to get this, we're going to get that. And then just seeing like that I had a high IQ level for the game. And then seeing that I was able to like make those passes, because you don't generally see bigs making those passes unless you got Jokic. You know, so you don't generally see guys making those type of passes and stuff and being able to make those reads quick on the fly like that. So I think once he's seen that, he was like, oh, okay, we can use this. Like, he has a really good passing ability. So we don't necessarily have to use our point guards to make all the reads and the passes. And we can use our point guards to space the court as opposed to having to do so many other jobs. And I think that's what really worked out for us.
Yeah. So I was scrolling through your basketball reference page and bio and other stuff and getting ready for the pod. And it something hit me, and I came up with my own new nickname for you, and it's not nearly as clever as Stacey King's. Mr. Transition. And I don't mean this in a basketball up and down the court sense. I mean this. I'm just going to run through this. 2007, you're drafted by the Sixers. You just missed the Allen Iverson era. He was traded away in 2006. You get there 2007. In 2009-10, though, that season, AI returns. So there's another transition. The brief return of AI, plays briefly 28 games, and then he's gone again. 2011-12, you're part of a Sixer team, one of the rare eight upsetting a one, but that was the year that you guys upset the Bulls with Derrick Rose going down with the ACL. Big transition year for them. 2013-14, you were in Philly for year one of the process. 19-63 final record. I'm sure that was real memorable. 2014-15, but that's another transition year, right? They're starting something new. 2015, you're acquired by the Nets for Kevin Garnett. You get to say that for the rest of your life, I was traded for Kevin Garnett. But that was the beginning of their teardown of the, you know, Darren Williams, whatever. That was the continuing of the teardown of the kind of fake super team that the Nets initially tried to put together when they came to Brooklyn. 2016, you're traded by the Nets to the Pacers to start the Sean Marks rebuild in Brooklyn. And you're traded for Caris LeVert, who became a big part of that rebuild. 2016-17, you're in Indy for the last year of the Paul George era. And now you're with the Bulls, and I don't know what this era is. I don't know what they're doing exactly, but there's some sort of transition going on. So,
you missed a couple things.
All right, hit me.
So the first couple of years of my career, we transitioned coaches for.
Well, that's true.
For
like the, so we they went do from, that a lot in Philly.
Yeah, we went from Mo Cheeks to Eddie Jordan, no, Mo Cheeks, Tony DeLeo, Eddie Jordan to Doug Collins to Brett Brown throughout that transition. And we also switched GMs as well. Went from Billy King to Ed Stefanski to Sam Hinkie. Yes. Switched ownerships.
Yes.
Went from Ed Snyder and Comcast Spectacor to Josh Harris and Apollo Management with David Blitzer and Will Smith and all those guys, Adam Aaron and all those guys. And then I was also traded in the Kevin Love trade with Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Bennett. So a couple things.
Yes, yeah, which a key one, because that's Kevin Love to the Cavs to help jumpstart that LeBron era. Wiggins, who was the Cavs pick to Minnesota, and that was a three-way deal. You're involved in that one too. So what is it with you, Thad? Like, why are you, like, is it you? Is it just where you were? Is it a coincidence? Or is there something in the universe where wherever you are, there's some strange transition happening?
Hey, I don't know, man. I think it's just, you got some guys that go through this their whole career, and then you have some guys that are just fortunate enough to, have that stability in their career. I think the good thing that I get from this is I've been able to help each and every situation that I've been in. I've been able to help position those teams to be better than they were the year before or the year, the year after I leave and stuff like that. And I've been fortunate enough to have the respect of every single player that I play with and every single organization that I played for. Like, I could still go back to all these different organizations and they're like, hey, man, we miss you. So I think, I've definitely had a lasting impact just for me being who I am as a player. And I think, being who I am as a person as well. I've been fortunate and blessed enough to have a long career. Yes, it's been a transition phase almost every other year, but those things happen, especially in the life that we live playing this game.
No question. I think, and I didn't look this up, but I'm going to guess off the top of my head, you and Carmelo might be the last guys in the league who actually were teammates with AI at some point. Carmelo in Denver and you in Philly. I'm not sure if anybody else played. I may be missing somebody. Those were off the top of my head, or Carmelo would be the other one.
Quite possible.
What do you remember of that? I think it was 28 games that Iverson was back with the Sixers in that return in the 2009-10 season. Is there any lasting memory of that? I mean, he wasn't the same Iverson by that point, and when he left, it was because his daughter was having some health issues that season, and then he just never came back. So not the full AI experience that you might have gotten if you'd been with him in the early 2000s. But what did you gain, or what do you remember, or what's a moment from that time?
The first day he came in, he had the first day he came in, he had all his stuff in my locker because he sat next to me in the practice facility. So he had all his stuff in my locker, and I came in and I was looking, and I set his stuff over next to his locker. And the first thing he said was, "Don't ever touch." He was joking though, but he said, "Don't ever touch my S again, you young punk B mother effer." And I started laughing. Like, I thought it was the funniest thing ever. But he was joking about it. But that was like the first time we had ever like spoke or had a conversation. And then from then on, like, we were just super cool. Like, I kind of had to hold my ground as a young guy. I was like, no, man, like, you sit your stuff in your locker. I sit my stuff in my locker. He was like, I own this locker room. I made this locker room. I was like, you right about that, but you ain't been here in 3 years. So
hard to argue the point.
That was one of the first experiences with him. And then another experience was him coming in and having, like, AI with all these big baggy clothes or whatever. So he comes in with some big baggy clothes on, like some big baggy jeans on. And he has a pair of tighty whities on over the jeans he had on. But they was blue and red with a Superman logo on. and he thought we was all just cracking up. So it was a good experience, because one thing he did was he kept everybody together. And he as well, he was always there for his teammates, with us when he came back. And then he was always very, very encouraging on, like, going out there and just being who you are as a player.
Yeah. I imagine when he first came and said, get all your, you know, don't ever touch my stuff. You could not. Did you know he's joking immediately, or is your first thought, oh shit, like AI legend is going to actually kill me and I'm toast, or they're gonna trade me tomorrow? Like, what do you?
It was a little bit of both. I was like, oh, he might be joking, but he might not be joking. I was like, I've heard the stories.
Yeah. And then last, I just wanted your other Philly memory here. This would not be a pleasant one, but you're one of the process. There was so much said about it at the time. And is this healthy for the team? Is this bad for the young players? And not to mention all just the ethics or morals of it, whatever. I'm curious, two things. What it was like to be in the midst of this very unique and strange and difficult season there. But also, I kind of look back and say, well, maybe it was worth it. They got Embiid and Simmons. It might not have been pleasant for you living through it, but for the franchise as a whole, like, hard to argue with the results. They have Embiid and Simmons. They've got two top 15 guys.
I'm gonna say this: that whole situation, the tank job to try to get, you know, the best picks and stuff like that, I was not on board for that at all. I honestly thought that I was going to be traded and I was going to be like out of there because of the situation that was going on. It wasn't ideal for me at that point in my career to be there and to be going through that. But one thing I did do was I played throughout the entirety of my duration there. Like, I never stopped playing. I didn't come into work and say, hey, I'm not playing today because they should have traded me or anything like that. I came and I played with the young guys. I played with Tony Roden and Michael Carter Williams and, James Anderson and Hollis Thompson and all those guys. Like, I came and played with those guys. So, and Brett Brown, like for him to go through that in those beginning stages, like, I think that was huge as well, because, you know, what coach wants to come into a situation where it's a tank job? So, my hat goes off to Brett, because, like, one thing he did do, he came to the gym every single day and he came to work and he came to try to make guys better. Like, we'll be in the gym and it can be rainy and snowy outside and he'll come into the gym and say, ah, it's a beautiful fucking day, mate. And you're like, like, what is he talking about? It's fucking snowing outside. but like, it's just that type of energy that makes you want to play for a guy like that. And, you know, I didn't want to turn my back on him nor my teammates. So I continued to play. But it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't the most ideal time for me to play. But I was highly pissed off. Like, I was pissed off. But I approached every single game as if I was pissed off. I think I averaged like 18, 19 or something like that season. But, you know, for me, like, it was definitely not an ideal season for me, because I felt like I was the only vet there. And I felt like, that I was still in the process of trying to figure out how to lead myself and how to transition to that leader role. And for that to kind of be thrown on me in that point in time, I had guys with me that was capable. Like, I had Drew Holiday. They traded him in the summer. I had Evan Turner. They traded him and Spencer Halls. They traded both of them. Traded LaVoy Allen, who I had been there with as well. And I was the last guy there, you know. And then we had another vet. We had Jason Richardson, but at that point in time, he was on an ACL injury. So yeah. I was kind of out there by myself, and I felt like, you know, that it could have been communicated with me a little bit better on the plans going forward and how things were, because, like, I was out there playing and it was like I was bringing a knife to a gunfight every night, you know, and that's a bad feeling. So I was very upset about that part, because I felt like there was a lot of trades on the table that could have been made and that, you know, they could have made those trades and facilitated those trades and then continued to go on with the tank job that they were doing.
Yeah. You have truly seen it all in this league 14 years. When you've been through the process, yes. You've been through AI, you've been through everything else. That's a lot. How many guys did Brett Brown impressions in that locker room, by the way? I can't do it. Like, I don't know how to replicate Maine plus Australia. Like, that's impossible. I think my mouth would break.
Nah, it was crazy. Brett was cool though. Like, he came in, he would like have conversations with you. He'll pull you into his office and like, for some reason, he never had the lights on in his office. It was always a lamp. He always had a lamp on in his office. Every time I went to his office, always a lamp. His big ass TV sitting in front of his desk. And like, he'll come in and he would ask me like questions and stuff about like geographical questions. So it'd be like, have you ever been to Australia? And I'd be like, no, but what does that have to do with us playing basketball? And then he'll just start going through like geographical stuff with me about like Australia, just trying to like lighten the mood as opposed to having a tough basketball conversation. And I think that was really good for me because I was able to kind of connect with him on a different level from basketball as opposed to basketball. Just having that conversation with him, just regular conversations about family, just different stuff in life and stuff like that. Because sometimes like you have to connect on a different level in order to have the respect or be respected by the coach or to just have those conversations and have that mutual respect between two.
Yeah, absolutely. I miss Brett. We need him back in the league. We need his accent back in the league, but also at his coaching. Hope to see him back. Before I let you go, I know you've got a lot going on off the court. You're turning 33 next week. Early happy birthday. You are already well preparing for your post career, whenever that is. Hopefully, it's still several years out. But I know you are. Along with Kevin Martin, and invested in the Brisbane Bullets in the Australian League. I know you've got your venture capital firm, Reform Ventures. Give me some sense of like where the Thaddeus Young businessman, where that is going, what your goals are there, or any cool shit that Reform Ventures is involved in right now.
I mean, for me, I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit, so I've always wanted to continue to be able to build my own empire outside of basketball. And I think that's what most guys are doing now anyway. I'm very hands-on with anything that I do. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to get myself or my team help get me into like some really, really good deals. Excuse me. some really, really good deals. I'll probably say like one of the more exciting deals is, we just made an investment into Overtime. And I've been talking with Zach at Overtime and they got a lot of big things going on, with Overtime Elite as well as the digital media side of what they do. So very excited about that. But, we've been able to get into some other stuff too, like DraftKings, Airbnb, DocuSign, like companies like that, to where we've been able to invest and see some type of returns quick, fast, and hurry. But we're continuing to invest into a lot of different companies across the board, in different sectors from consumer products to artificial intelligence to machine learning and stuff like that. So we've been getting into a lot of different things, but I love what we're doing as a company, and we're continuing to grow and we're continuing to build, but we also continue to develop relationships and partnerships. I think that's what's really put me in a position to be able to get into this space is the relationships and partnerships that I built from playing basketball with a lot of the guys that sit courtside and a lot of people that I cross paths with. And I've been able to nurture those relationships and continue to build them. And get phone calls now, just, hey, what do you think about this? Hey, would you like to be a part of this? And like, these phone calls are not just from, people who make, millions of dollars and people who make thousands of dollars. These are from some billionaires. So I'm been fortunate enough to build those relationships and have a lot of relationships to where I can get into some really good deals, but also continue to build my brand outside of basketball, which is, which is what I've been wanting to do and will continue to do.
And probably still a few more years left of the basketball too, I assume.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, after the season I just had, I think that shows. So for me, I think it's for me to just continue to go out there and play, continue to go out there and be who I am as a player, and just try to keep building on that. And then, when I feel like I can't play anymore or that I don't have that passion for the game anymore, then I walk away and start to focus on other things. But one thing for sure, I'm prepared for whatever's ahead.
Good deal. Well, this has been great, Thad. Appreciate you spending the time. Good luck with the backyard excavation renovation.
Oh man, that's crazy.
The off season. Hopefully a better run for your Bulls next season. I'd like some more time in Chicago in the spring in the playoffs. Chicago's beautiful then. So I hope they you guys get things going in the right direction.
Yes, sir. Thank you.